All right, Shabbat Shalom and welcome to United Israel World Union. This is our Sabbath morning service coming to you live from the historic Temple Sinai Synagogue in St. Francisville, Louisiana, thanks to an arrangement with the Julius Freehand Foundation and with the West Feliciana Historical Society. We are excited to be here with you today, back from a little bit of difference last week. I want to give a special thank you to the Coles and to Dave and Patty Tyler. And I don't know, was Stephen there with you guys as well? Okay, so thanks to the whole Tyler clan and for filling in and for teaching a class last week on marriage and the significance of marriage and how to create an environment for a lasting and loving relationship. I think a lot of us could use that. So if you miss it, go back and check that out. I was in North Carolina for I think we can call it a United Israel wedding. The young couple met one another through United Israel, and it's always good to see young people get together, and it was a beautiful wedding. I have to say, it was quite lovely. The Cantley-Onstadt wedding, Jared and Mikkel were joined together in holy matrimony in North Carolina. So it was a great time, and it was wonderful to be part of that. And we're back. Shabbat Shalom, and we are approaching the new month. So today on the Jewish calendar is the first day of the 10th month, basically. And so what I wanted to do today, first of all, I want to give you a couple of announcements. We have two events that are coming up. If you're a Facebook person, you know about these. If you're not, you're going to know about them in just a moment. The first event is tomorrow. We're going to have a Hanukkah party at the United Israel Center South here in St. Francisville. And so that party is going to be full of fun and games and fellowship and some traditional type things around the Hanukkah season. And it just so happens that tomorrow leads us into that final day. So during that particular celebration, it's from 5 to 7 at the UI Center South, we'll light up the menorah with all the light shining. So it's the time to come. And John and Lyndon got us this wonderful large display that is outside of the United Israel Center South. And so we'll have all the light shining there. And both within and without, we'll have the light shining. So come join us. And as one said one time, let your light shine. So we're going to do that. We're going to have it shining bright. And you're welcome to join us. Anyone and everyone, we'll decide if we go live on that or not. It's just sort of up in the air. We're going to play it like we're going to tell you that we're not, to make you, if you're local, get up and come join us. And then we might show it live for those who can't make it. But we'll see about that. That's up to Dave. So if it's live, that's Dave gets all the credit. If it's not, he gets all the blame. So that's the way we'll do that. Now, January the 8th, we have another event, and I put this one on a Facebook event as well. Hanok Young, my longtime friend, our longtime friend, friend of United Israel, will be here. That's a Wednesday night, and we're going to host Hanok here at the United Israel Center South, and he's going to give a talk. You know, he comes several times a year now to the States, and he goes from congregation to congregation, small group to small group. He does big things as well. But his talk this time is called The Courage to be Blessed. So he's going to be talking, and that again is January the 8th. So if you are on Facebook and you plan to come, simply let us know you're coming by selecting the appropriate box on the Facebook event. And that way we know how much food John and Lyndon and Sherry have to prepare. So that helps us a lot just to know that. It really does. Now, not only are those announcements that ought to come out, but they're connected in a way. They're connected not only with one another, but they're connected with my talk today. How so? Because if you think about it, the party tomorrow is a celebration of Hanukkah, and the talk is given by a man named Hanok. These two names and words, Hanukkah and Hanok, are from the same Hebrew root. And that root is the root of my class today. I'm going to be talking to you about Hanukkah. What does Hanak mean? The root word of Hanok and Hanukkah. That's what we're going to talk about. Because the question is relevant, especially at this time of year. You'll notice on social media that there are various views about the festival of Hanukkah. What is it? Is it biblical? Is it not? Is it a secular holiday? Is it somewhat of a Jewish Christmas, as many people might suppose? What is Hanukkah? And I'm going to talk about that today. Some of you who join us each week for a Torah class, you won't miss a thing from the Torah, I assure you. Because next week, we're in the middle, by the way, of the Joseph saga, as I like to refer to it. Those Torah portions, those Torah readings that speak of the cycle of readings that speak of the person that we know as Joseph, the son of Jacob, the son of Israel. So I'll be able next week to pull in material from the past two Torah readings, and I promise you, you'll get a full class on Joseph. But I felt this week that it was appropriate to talk about Hanukkah, because we're in the midst of Hanukkah. We are presently, today marks the sixth day of Hanukkah. So it's not too late, because some of you have just been faking it. You've been going through the motions, and you don't really know why you're lighting the candles and eating all the fried foods and things like that. So I'm not going to talk about all the unhealthy foods. What I'm going to talk about is the source of the celebration. In other words, why would we be part of this? Many in our group are Jewish, some are not. But the idea that anyone would celebrate Hanukkah without really understanding the historical significance of what gave us this celebration. It's an eight-day celebration. It begins on the 25th day of the ninth biblical month and goes for 8 days. Why 8 days? Now, there are a couple of different opinions here, and we'll talk to those points. I did want to mention, just in passing, because we posted this, I put it in the United Israel Bulletin, Dr. Tabor wrote several years ago an article that questioned the significance of Hanukkah, and he brought up everybody knows about Hanukkah, you know, the 25th day of the ninth month, but what about the 24th day of the ninth month? Now, the beginning of Hanukkah, right before the Hanukkah celebration begins, there's a very specific day that's mentioned by the prophet Haggai. And the prophet Haggai, in three places, mentions the 24th day of the ninth month. And it says specifically in the 19th verse of chapter 2 of the prophet Haggai that from this day forward, I will bless you. It is the only day in all of Scripture that is referred to and that God says, from this day forward, I'll bless you. So this day is a day of blessing, and it sort of, in a way, historically leads the way into the story that I want to tell you today. This particular eight-day festival or celebration known as Hanukkah, and by the way, we'll talk about the real meaning of that word throughout this class, but this particular eight-day celebration is known variously. It's sometimes referred to as the Feast of Dedication. It's sometimes called the Feast of the Maccabees. It's popularly known as the Festival of Lights. The Talmud refers to it as the Feast of Illumination. There's a lot to do with lighting up, with the burning of flames. Why is that? Now, I want to make a very point at the beginning of my talk today and say that it is not, Hanukkah, you know this, most of you, is not mentioned as one of the quote-unquote biblical festivals or the Mo'adei, the appointments of Jehovah in Leviticus 23. It's not listed there. You can read through Leviticus 23 and you'll find the festivals of Jehovah. This is not listed. So there is even a question among biblically oriented folks as to whether we should keep it at all. In fact, I know very good friends of mine do not celebrate Hanukkah because it's not one of the biblical festivals. And I want to talk about that. I want to get into this subject a little bit because while they are right in that technically it's not a biblical festival, i.e., it's not mentioned in Leviticus 23, it's not mentioned in Deuteronomy 16, it's not mentioned in Exodus 23, it's never mentioned in the Torah as far as a celebration. It happens much, much later, by the way. But thematically, in other words, there are themes that are brought to the fore when we talk about the celebration of Hanukkah that can be understood as relating to the Bible and biblical faith. The themes that connect Hanukkah and the themes that are brought out in this celebration that can be associated with biblical faith are the meaning of the word. Hanak is typically translated as to dedicate, to consecrate. I even like to prepare something for a special purpose. So you could shorten that and say that Hanak can mean to prepare for a purpose. So when you think about that, that's the first thing. So what is Hanukkah? Hanukkah is talking about dedication or rededication of what? That's part of the main part of the story. Dreidels came later. The chocolate candy came later. The big celebrations at the state capitals came later. What are all of those things really based upon when we talk about celebration? The dedication of something, we'll talk about it. Light is another key theme in the days of Hanukkah. Light or illumination. And then finally, I would bring in the concept or the idea of the miraculous. So you've got dedication, light, and miracles. And I'm going to seek to bring in a biblical element based upon the themes that represent the season. So that tonight and tomorrow night, when you light up your Hanukkah, your 8-branched menorah, if you will, with the 9th, with the candle, the servant candle, you'll say, I know what it's about. Now, some of you say, I already know all this. Well, buckle up. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. Now, these themes that I'm talking about, dedication, light, and miraculous events, they find their way into the traditional elements of the day. Everything from the stories, the traditions, and even the games bring in these special themes that are appropriate for the festival of Hanukkah. Let me give you an example. How many of you know how to play dreidel? You ever play the dreidel? You spin the top, and it's got some Hebrew letters on it. Now, if you're in the States, it's got a set of letters. If you're in the land of Israel, it's got a different set of letters. Why is that? Because in the States, or in the dispersion, you might say, the diaspora outside of the land of Israel, you will say, Nes gadol haya sham. A great miracle happened there. If you're in the land of Israel, your top, your dreidel, will say something different. It is say, Nes gadol haya po. A great miracle happened here. So whether one is talking about the miraculous taking place here or there, I love the idea about the miraculous and how it's associated with this particular day. This celebration of Hanukkah is often associated with an account that comes to us from Jewish sources. According to the Jewish sages, the festival of Hanukkah is directly tied to the discovery when the temple is taken back, the Hashmonean priest needed to light the menorah, the seven-branched menorah, I should add, that was a central piece of furniture in the tabernacle and in the Beit HaMikdash, in the temples. This particular story, as related by the Jewish sages, says that this must be tamid, it must burn continually. But they find only one vial, one cruse of oil, which is only sufficient to burn for one day. Now they've got an option. They could say, we're not going to light it until we have enough holy oil in storage to keep this thing going. Or they can act, as most people now look back and say, in faith, and say, we're going to burn what we have now. We're going to jump into the execution phase of keeping the Torah and depend on God to back us up. And that's what they did, according to the story. And they get into this process, and they take the oil that they have, and they put it into the menorah, and miraculously, it burns not just one day, not just 2 days, not just three, not just four, but it burns for 8 days, allowing them time to produce enough oil. It's a miracle. In modern terms, and I've seen people post memes about this, it's somewhat relevant. It says, imagine your phone, your iPhone. You know, all people who are holy have Apple products. But if you used your iPhone and you only had 10% and your battery is only 10% and your charger is in another place, and it lasts for 8 days. This is the story of Hanukkah in modern days. But because of the miracle of the lamps, according to the Jewish sages, this day is popularly known as the Festival of Lights or Illumination. There are two traditional blessings that are specifically used in association with the festival of Hanukkah. And I, for what it's worth, prefer one over the other. The one that I prefer, as all Hebrew blessings begin, Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech haolam, blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who performed miracles for our ancestors in those days, at that time. Now, I like that. Now, why do I like it over and above the other? So, I'm not Jewish, and my approach to Torah observance is strictly based on the text. So, the other that deals with the lighting of the candles says that they're commanded to light the candles, which I personally don't see in the text. But this blessing is much easier for me to latch onto because I believe with all my heart that it was in that place, in those days, and at that time where God performed, as often He does, a great miracle for the fathers. I want to talk to you today about what, in my estimation, in my understanding, is the true documented miracle of those days at that time. Now, I think you need both of these. You need to say, in those days at this time. So, in other words, there's one thing that's beautiful about the Hebrew faith and the festivals associated therewith. You are marking time in concert with these ancient stories. It's not like you're keeping a certain festival or an observance and it doesn't relate to the story in its original context. So when I keep Pesach, as we do today in the modern day, and I go on the first day and I look at the moon and it's full, and I tell my children and my grandchildren, the moon was full at that time. In those days, at this time, when the children of Israel departed from Egypt, the moon was full, and the little eyes look up at the sky, and they relate to the story. In Sukkot, when I'm camping with children and grandchildren, and I look through the top of my sukkah, and I say, this is to remind us that the children of Israel camped in temporary dwellings. And on the beginning of Sukkot, in the ancient world, they looked up and saw the moon just as you see it tonight. And so it is with Hanukkah. The miracle that I want to talk about today happened in those days at that time. The same season that we celebrate it today. And there is and there are reasons for the season. Reasons for the season. It's more than the idea of dedication. It's being dedicated to that which is right. One can dedicate themselves to things that are not right. Dedication in this story is specifically to the right. It is more than celebrating light, but it's the celebration of a transition from darkness to light. If you recognize that light is an important aspect of the day, that's good. But remember that the true story is taking that which is dark and bringing light to the fore. And it's more than a story about a miracle. It's really the overturning of evil. That which was intended to be bad in those days and in this season, it was an overturning of bad to good. Another way to say it, more to the point, I'm talking to you today about how Hanukkah, what happened in those days at this season, is best described, at least the way I understand it, as a transitional period. A transitional period from that which is non-committal to being dedicated, or not used, or not purposed in the correct way to being dedicated to the right thing. It's a transition from darkness to light, and it is a transitional time from hopelessness to the miraculous. From hopeless to miraculous. A key in the story, as you can tell, is the phrase in our blessing, at this time, or in this season. It's very specific, and we'll see that. Now, I'm going to be reading because I want you to look at the story. We talked about what the Talmud says, what the Jewish literature says about the miraculous lasting of the oil. Maccabees is the source that I want to talk to you from today. It's less known in many circles. But the book of Maccabees knows nothing about a miracle involving the oil. It doesn't mention it. But I'm going to tell you the story from the book of Maccabees, and I want to read it to you, so I'm going to be reading a little bit, and then I'll make comments. But I think it's essential that we do this today at this time. So if you have Maccabees, and most of you say, I don't have that, you'll just have to trust me on this. You can find it online for free, but it's very interesting. So I'm going to be reading to you today from 1 Maccabees, chapter 1, and beginning in verse 41. Now, I would encourage you, especially during this season, if you have time this weekend maybe, to read the entire story, because I'm only going to be reading excerpts that are significantly associated with Hanukkah. And there's a lot that goes before and a lot that comes after. So just here's the part that I want to begin with. 1 Maccabees 1, beginning in 41. It says, then the king wrote to his whole kingdom that all should be one people, and that each should give up his customs. All the Gentiles accepted the command of the king. Many, even from Israel, gladly adopted his religion. So I want to make this point. The writer of Maccabees is very clear to say that all the Gentiles accepted it. You know, because to them, they're like, okay, we don't. Everybody just put your beliefs, your traditions aside, your customs, and everybody should have one religion. And it says many from Israel accepted this as well. So they're... It's not like everyone in Israel said, no, we were to be a people that are separate. We're to be, you know, this is not the image. This is telling a story that has plagued the people of Israel throughout the generations, is their willingness to accommodate and to absorb themselves into the culture around them. It's popular. All right, it says that many, even from Israel, gladly adopted his religion. They sacrificed to idols and profaned the Sabbath. And the king sent letters by messengers to Jerusalem and the cities of Judah. He directed them to follow customs strange to the land, to forbid burnt offerings and sacrifices and drink offerings in the sanctuary, to profane Sabbaths and feasts, to defile the sanctuary and the priest, to build altars and sacred precincts and shrines for idols, to sacrifice swine and unclean animals, and to leave their sons uncircumcised. They were to make themselves abominable by every unclean and profane thing, so that they should forget the law and change all the ordinances. And whoever does not obey the command of the king shall die. Oh, and there's that. So, like, we're going to put this religion out there, expect everyone to go along with it. If you choose not to, you're going to die. It says in verse 51, and in such words he wrote to his whole kingdom And he appointed inspectors over all the people and commanded the cities of Judah to offer sacrifices city by city. Many of the people, everyone who forsook the law, joined them, and they did bad or evil in the land. They drove Israel into hiding in every place of refuge they had. Now, in the 15th day of Kislev, the 145th year, which is about 167 BCE, this is a different calendar, they erected a desolating sacrilege upon the altar of burnt offering. Now, I need to add here, many of you who are prophecy students who love to read the book of Daniel, I have some close friends who do that. This is the only ancient reference that corresponds to the passage in Daniel about the desolating sacrilege, or however you translate that, the abomination of desolation. So if you're a student of Daniel, you have to go here. This is the reference. They erected a desolating sacrilege upon the altar of burnt offering. They also built altars in the surrounding cities of Judah and burned incense at the doors of the houses and in the streets. The books of the Torah, which they found, they tore to pieces and burned with fire. And where the book of the covenant was found in the possession of anyone, or if anyone adhered to the Torah, the decree of the king condemned him to death. They kept using violence against Israel, against those found month after month in the cities. And on the 25th day of the month, they offered sacrifice on the altar, which was upon the altar of burnt offering. According to the decree, they put to death the women who had their children circumcised, and their families and those who circumcised them, and they hung the infants around their mother's necks. But many in Israel stood firm and were resolved in their hearts not to eat unclean food, and they chose rather to die than to be defiled by food or to profane the holy covenant, and they did die. And very great wrath came upon Israel. On the 25th day of the ninth month in 167 BCE, these last words describe the horror in those days at this time. But it says, parenthetically almost, but many in Israel stood firm and were resolved in their hearts. It's interesting that they were willing to die over diet and this circumcision rite. They were willing to go to the death over a diet. In other words, it would be so easy just to go, okay, well, all right, just I'll eat it, just don't kill me. But some stood firm. In those days, at that time, great horror in the streets and in the towns. Now, I'm not going to read the entire story about the rebellion that arose, but I do want to tell you that chapter 2 of 1 Maccabees talks about the rise of a man by the name of Mattathias and his five sons. Mattathias and his five sons. Now, let me give you just a taste of how these people rose up. So in chapter 2, verse 19, Mattathias answered and said in a loud voice, "Even if all the nations that live under the rule of the king obey him and have chosen to do his commandments, departing excuse me, each one from the religion of his fathers, yet I and my sons and my brothers will live by the covenant of our fathers. Far be it from us to desert the Torah and the ordinances. We will not obey the king's words by turning aside from our religion to the right hand or to the left. He's using language from Deuteronomy, by the way. Deuteronomy is the only book in the Torah that says don't turn to the left or the right. So he's saying, I don't care what he says. It doesn't matter if everyone else forsakes the religion of the ancestors. As for me and my house, I'm paraphrasing, we'll serve Jehovah. I look down, verse 27, Mattathias cried out in a city with a loud voice saying, let everyone who is zealous for the Torah and supports the covenant come out with me. And he and his sons fled to the hills and left all that they had in the city. So Mattathias and the boys said, we're not going to do this. In fact, if you want to come with us, we're going to the wilderness. Look, there's something about that wilderness. The faithful always find refuge in the wilderness. Even in modern days, we might say. This idea, he calls to those who are zealous for the Torah. And that phrase occurs various times throughout these particular texts. In fact, in verse 49 of chapter 2 in 1 Maccabees, it says, now the days drew near for Mattathias to die, and he said to his sons, arrogance and reproach have now become strong. It's a time of ruin and furious anger. Now, my children, show zeal for the Torah and give your lives for the covenant of our fathers. Mattathias is a great hero. He's willing to sacrifice all on behalf of the covenant. He's zealous for the Torah and for the ancient covenant of the fathers. He's not willing to show accommodation to the ways of the people as the king commanded. Now, ultimately, the stand of Mattathias and the boys and those who joined them pays off. You know, sometimes it only takes just a few people who have the courage to stand for the right, and others will be emboldened by that. If everyone cowers and goes along with the wrong, you know, the Torah forbids that, by the way, to not follow a majority to do wrong. The Torah is telling us that within the Torah, there is a command that says you do right regardless of what others do. That's sometimes not easy. It's easy to go with the majority. It's easy to accept because we can look around and say, well, most people are doing this. What difference does it make? The Torah says we're not allowed to do that. Then 1 Maccabees chapter 4, beginning in verse 36. We're talking about in those days and in this season. What you're going to see is that on the same days that the darkest things happened to Israel, that light would enter in. It could have been any day. But God chose, it appears, to act on behalf of his people, not only in a very strong and visible way, but on the same time and the same day. Then said Judas and his brothers, "Behold, our enemies are crushed. Let us go up to cleanse the sanctuary and dedicate it." Now here's where we begin to understand the meaning of Chanukah, to dedicate something. The root word is Chanak. So all the army assembled, and they went up to Mount Zion, and they saw the sanctuary desolate, the altar profaned, and the gates burned. In the courts they saw bushes sprung up as in a thicket, or as on one of the mountains. By the way, the prophet Micah talks about how ultimately the Temple Mount would be plowed like a field and so forth. You know, they were witnessing the prophetic situation right before their eyes. And they saw all the chambers of the priest in ruins. They rent their clothes and mourned with great lamentation and sprinkled themselves with ashes. They fell face down on the ground and sounded the signal on the trumpets and cried out to heaven. And then Judas detailed men to fight against those in the citadel until he had cleansed the sanctuary. He chose blameless priests devoted to the Torah, and they cleansed the sanctuary, removed defiled stones to an unclean place. And they deliberated what to do about the altar of burnt offering, which had been profaned. And they thought it best to tear it down, lest it bring reproach upon them, for the Gentiles had defiled it. So they tore down the altar, and they stored the stones in a convenient place on the temple hill until there should come a prophet to tell what to do with them. Then they took unhewn stones as the law directs, Deuteronomy, by the way, Exodus as well, and built a new altar like the former one. They also rebuilt the sanctuary in the interior of the temple, and they consecrated the courts. They made new holy vessels and brought the lampstand, the altar of incense, and the table into the temple. Then they burned incense on the altar and lighted the lamps on the lampstand, and these gave light in the temple. They placed the bread on the table, hung up the curtains. Thus they finished all the work they had undertaken. Now get this. Early in the morning, on the 25th day of the ninth month, which is the month of Kislev, in the 148th year, which is 164 BCE, they rose and offered sacrifice as the Torah directs on the new altar of burnt offering which they had built at the very season, on the very day that the Gentiles had profaned it. It was dedicated with songs and harps and lutes and cymbals. All the people fell on their faces and worshipped and blessed heaven who had prospered them. And they celebrated the dedication of the altar for 8 days. And offered burnt offering with gladness. They offered a sacrifice of deliverance and praise. They decorated the front of the temple with golden crowns and small shields and inflatable menorahs. I just added that. They restored the gates and the chambers for the priest and furnished them with doors. There was very great gladness among the people, and the reproach of the nations was removed. And then Judas and his brothers and all the assembly of Israel determined that every year at that season, the days of dedication of the altar should be observed with gladness and joy for 8 days, beginning with the 25th day of the month of Kislev. So here we have the story as recorded in the book of Maccabees. The reason for the 8-day celebration to this day is to recognize that 8 days they celebrated in those days at this season. Now, at its heart, Hanukkah celebrates the rededication of the objects associated with worship. And I'm going to tell the story and work through this idea. I want you to hear me say this, though. All of this, you can dress the stones, you can build altars, you can erect temples, you can hang beautiful decorations. But the dedication that God is looking for begins with you. It begins with the individual. Because if you aren't committed to doing the right, even when the majority does wrong, all the beautiful buildings, the temples, the altars, the rituals, the rites won't do any good. It comes down to right, R-I-G-H-T, over right, R-I-T-E. That's really what it comes down to. We're talking in this story before they rededicate an altar of stone. These people had committed themselves to the right. You see what I'm saying? They had gotten it right on the inside before they worried about the right on the outside. But they do worry about the right on the outside. Now, I want to take you through a couple of texts just quickly, because I want to show you references in the Torah and the Tanakh that have Hanak, the dedicate, as a root word. So let's go to the book of Numbers, the book of Numbers chapter 7. These are just so you have them in your notes, and it won't take me long. I'm going to go through a few of them pretty quickly. Numbers chapter 7, beginning in verse 10. And the leaders offered offerings for the dedication of the altar on the day it was anointed. You see, this is the dedication. That's Hanak is the root word. Notice that they do this on the day it was anointed. And leaders offered their offering before the altar. And Jehovah said to Moses, they shall offer their offerings, one leader each day, for the dedication of the altar. Now look down at verse 84, Numbers 7, verse 84. This was the dedication offering for the altar on the day when it was anointed from the leaders of Israel, 12 pieces and so forth and so on. Look down at verse 88. And all the cattle for the sacrifice of peace offering, 24 bulls, and goes on and on. This was the dedication offering for the altar after it was anointed. A couple of points here. The dedication takes place after the anointing, which the anointing is meant to consecrate something and set it apart for sacred use. So the dedication is, in a way, putting something aside and dedicating it or committing it, purposing it for something holy. Now, if you'll look with me to Deuteronomy, it's not just this word is not just used for a tabernacle or a temple. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 20, verse 5. Deuteronomy 20, and I'm reading from an English Bible today, because it's the only Bible I have that has the Maccabees in it. So chapter 20 of Deuteronomy, verse 5. Then the officers, by the way, this is the Torah concerning warfare. Then the officers shall speak to the people, saying, what man of you is there that has built a new house and not dedicated it? Let him go back to his house, lest he die in the battle and another man dedicate it. So even a personal space, a home, should be dedicated, committed to do that which is right. And that's the story here in Deuteronomy. Now, just so you have these in your notes, 1 Kings 8:63 talks about the dedication of the house. Ezra chapter 6, verse 16 and 17. Nehemiah chapter 12, verse 27. 2 Chronicles chapter 7, verses 5 and 9. All of those deal with dedication of the altar or the Beit HaMikdash, the temple. But I wanted to give you a couple more that I found in my studies that I think are interesting. You may have heard these verses and had a different translation in your head. You remember the story in Genesis 14 that talks about Abraham. Remember, his nephew Lot is taken captive. And Abraham, in this particular story, is presented almost as a warlord. He assembles some people and he goes back and gets Lot. It travels a long way to do it, by the way. But in this particular passage, it says, let's see. Let me find the passage. He took his trained men, and I won't look for it long because I thought it was in off the top of my head. I was looking at Genesis 14. But he says, take your, you know, when he takes his trained men, in that particular passage, it says his dedicated ones. It's tied to this root word, dedicate, hanak. So we come up with this idea, and it's brought forward in some of the language tools that you'll find. Sometimes hanak can mean train. Sometimes it's associated with the word train. Now, as in you teach someone something. Now, you're familiar with this passage from Proverbs 22:6. Train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he's old, he'll not depart from it. You ever quoted that? How many of you memorized it that way? Train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he... In Hebrew, that word is tied to the root word hanak. Dedicate this child. And we always think about this as... And I've read what the language tools say about how they get trained out of this dedicate. But it is a particular purposing of something which is dedicated. So like when I take my grandchildren and I hold them and I hold them up and dedicate them, it's that my prayer over these children is that God would use them for very special purpose. And then every time they're around Saba, if no one else is talking Bible, they'll get it, you know, they'll hear it, see? So just think about that. Proverbs 22:6. By the way, in Hebrew, it might be a different number, but I think it is 22:6. Now, one other passage that contains our root word, chanak, and perhaps the most relevant at this time of year, I'll close with this summary of this particular portion. According to the Talmud, or in Tractate Soferim, what I'm about to read to you is to be read at Hanukkah. So Tractate Soferim says you need to read this at Hanukkah. It's part of the introductory liturgy for the daily, the Sabbath, and the festival morning service. It's a Psalm of David. And according to the superscription, it says, Mizmor Shir Chanukat Habayit LeDavid. A song of dedication of the house for David. So the Hebrew phrase, Chanukat Habayit. Chanukat. You hear the sounds very similar to Hanukkah. It's often considered among the Thanksgiving Psalms. I want to read it to you. It's Psalm 30. Psalm 30, a psalm of David, a song at the dedication of the house. I will extol thee, O Jehovah, for you have drawn me up and have not let my foes rejoice over me. O Jehovah, my God, I cried to thee for help, and you've helped me. O Jehovah, you brought up my soul from Sheol, restored me to life among those gone down to the pit. Sing praises to Jehovah, O you, his saints, and give thanks to his holy name. For his anger is but for a moment, and his favor is for a lifetime. Weeping may tarry for the night, but joy comes in the morning. And as for me, I said in my prosperity, I shall never be moved. But your favor, O Jehovah, you've established me as a strong mountain. And you hid your face, I was dismayed. To thee, O Jehovah, I cried, and to Jehovah I made supplication. What profit is there in my death? If I go down to the pit, will the dust praise you? Will it tell of your faithfulness? Hear, O Jehovah, and be gracious to me. O Jehovah, be thou my helper. You've turned for me my mourning into dancing. You've loosed my sackcloth and girded me with gladness, that my soul may praise thee and not be silent. O Jehovah, my God, I give thanks to you forever. It begins with an exaltation of Jehovah. The question is why? The answer is because he's raised him up. The word used is to draw you up like water. If you dip a bucket into a deep well, it's the idea that you are at a low place and God can pick you up. And further, he's exalting Jehovah because Jehovah has not allowed his enemies to rejoice over him. How many of you would love that? You know, it's not only this idea that God has the ability to bring you from the lowest place up, but that he can shut the mouths of your enemies. When I pray like David. When people call me and they ask me to pray about something, look, you know, David said sometimes about his enemies, kick their teeth in. I'm just telling you, that's the way I pray. Now, some of y'all are too sweet to do that, but I'm just letting it out the bag here. David cried to Jehovah for help, and he healed him. He says he brought up his soul from Sheol. David is saying, at my lowest, when I felt that I was at death's door, you brought me up. That's why he praises Jehovah. He says he kept him alive from the pit. He admits that sometimes that anger burns for a moment, but his ratzon, Jehovah's favor, is for life. You know, sometimes we feel down. Sometimes we go to bed and things are dark. See, that's the idea that says sometimes weeping comes at night, but joy comes in the morning. Just hold out, hold on. There are times when we feel badly, when we're sick, when we're close to death, when we're downtrodden, defeated. Enemies talk about us. People talk about me all the time. I mean, some of you guys have seen, I've shown you some of those things I get, emails, and you know, if that's what I focused on, look, if I cared, I could really get down. But I don't. Because I know that ultimately Jehovah will shut the mouths of our enemies. But listen, relief is not promised to be immediate. You have to hang on. You've got to ride out the dark times. It's the old He never promised you a rose garden. There are promises of a rose garden, but you may have to go through some thorns to get to it. It's not always going to be sunshines and birds singing. There are days of storm. There are days of trouble. There's mourning. We hold out because the God that's able to bring us through the darkness is capable of bringing us to the light. The story of biblical faith is that you will be transitioned if you hold fast. David says, when we're at ease, we say, I will not be moved. It's very telling. When everything goes well, we can stick our chest out and talk about how blessed we are. But it says, he goes on to say, in times of trouble, we struggle. It's not as easy to be a person of faith when all hell breaks loose. I mean, it really isn't. It's tougher. In some ways, many of us have become the fair weather faithful. When things are good, we're in. If things are not so good, we fall aside. Hanukkah tells the story of those who stood firm and resolved in their heart to live uprightly when it wasn't easy to do so. When the easy thing would be to follow the majority. It's the story of a season of great darkness, but it's also the story in which a few sons of light stood up with the intent of bringing about a great restoration, a rededication. These are our example. These, the ones who were zealous for the Torah, are our example. These are the ones on whose behalf God performed a great miracle in those days at this season. Listen, the true miracle, whether or not oil burned miraculously for 8 days or not, that'd be a miracle. But a bigger miracle than that happened here and there. And that is that God overturned the deepest, darkest period, and he brought about a period of light. He took these people who were in mourning and transitioned them to a people of the dance. To go from mourning to dancing is a vivid image. In the psalm called the Hanukkah Habayit, the dedication of the house, it tells that story. The true test in every generation is for all of us to hold on through the darkest times, to stand firm for what we believe and not follow necessarily the majority. And when you light your Hanukkah over the next 2 days, you have two more lightings for the Hanukkah, if you celebrate Hanukkah. I want you to think of those who shined in those days and at that time. And then I want you to think about this. Ye, you plural, do likewise, and let your light shine before men. Shabbat shalom.